imitated, never duplicated. This is the one and only Fash the Nation, your guiding light in a sea of degeneracy.
Episode 213 of Fash the Nation, Jazz Hands Reveals, joined as always by Marcus Alvesham. Had one hell of a shitty day. How about you, Marcus?
Yeah. You've told me about your trials and tribulations. Yeah, I don't know. And then certainly not as bad as yours, but
we got a constitutional crisis here.
Yeah, oh God, yes, constitutional crisis out of control, yeah.
So, we're going to talk about the impeachment stuff, Iran and Venezuela, and also talk about immigration. I saw about an hour ago a notification that I think 109,000 apprehensions in April, the second month in a row that they've been above 100,000. And then I saw the companion headline to that, which is like 168,000 illegals have been released into the country in April as well. So, yeah. Excellent job, Donald. This is going wonderfully.
Yeah, the 100K or 109,000 or whatever. I saw in an article from The Hill. It didn't mention like you said, that this is the second time this has happened in a month, but I guess it was able to edge out the previous month's figure by a little bit, because apparently it is the highest since 2007.
Yeah, I mean, we're breaking records with the economy, record low unemployment, and now we have record numbers of illegals coming into the country. So, you know, at first, like, unemployment was a 25-year low, then a 39-year low. Like, we're at a what? 15-year record? No, 12-year record now. How many more months, like, by summer are we going to be at, like, historical numbers of apprehensions coming across the border? I think we are. I mean, that's the direction that this thing's going.
Yeah, you know, and 2007, I mean, you know, it's like you're invoking the economic numbers. It only ebbed, you know, certainly not because the fucking Bush administration did anything about it. It was because the economy was going to hell in a handbasket, and Paco decided that there was nothing here for him.
Yeah, the greatest border security there ever was a crashed economy. it's the only thing effective. I mean, there are better methods, but that seems to be the only one in the current state of the kosher sandwich, as it were. And this is, you know, there's a lot of immigration news. We're going to get into that. But it's a great distraction to have Venezuela, Iran, and impeachment. And, you know, you mentioned Jerry Nadler at the beginning, and my narrative on impeachment is that Trump wants to keep this issue of impeachment alive because it is the thing that he will use to unite his coalition, his base. He can't use promises that he made, except maybe on trade and maybe on an economy for, you know, the broader swath of MAGA. But he certainly can't use immigration. He walked back his legal immigration promise this week with the bill. So, I mean, the impeachment thing is a great distraction, isn't it? And it's being very distracting. Like, you unless you're paying very close attention, you're not going to see the apprehension numbers. You're not going to see the catch and release numbers. You're just going to see, oh, don't impeach my president. I mean, that's the Grug MAGA take.
Yeah, well, this is something I think that Mike nailed, you know, make America great again. And, you know, winning is going to be redefined as Trump still being president. Yeah, I think he was saying that mostly in reference to, you know, an actual impeachment fight as opposed to the specter of it being raised in 2020. But it's essentially the same effect, like as long as he cannot be impeached and use that. You know, as a political windfall in 2020, then yeah, we're winning.
Well, and that's why I think, you know, the argument that that the Mueller probe was ended because Trump is giving them what they want on immigration and more so on the Middle East. It may be true, and time may bear that out. I mean, to be honest, like, they're not, you know, Assad's still alive. There aren't troops on the ground fighting a hot war in Syria. I mean, they're not getting everything that they want. But I think the more pressing reason why the Mueller probe was kill, because it was benefiting Trump. Why do you think he's keeping this impeachment issue alive? It benefits him to do this. If he's not keeping his other promises, he's got to keep this fear of impeachment alive. That's why he's, you know, he came out after virtually all of the Republican Party and Bill Barr was on the record saying, yeah, I mean, Mueller come in and testify, whatever. What's he going to say? And then Trump comes out and says, Mueller should not testify under any circumstance. So I don't think it's any, I don't think Trump's, I mean, maybe there's things Trump's afraid of, but I think it benefits him to sort of, you know, do this bit where he pushes them into impeachment, because it's not a smart thing for the Democrats to do strategically, right? I mean, I think we all agree on that. And that's why the Mueller probe ultimately was not going to be politically beneficial for the J left to continue, because it delivers re-election for Trump if they continue that. Weissman wanted to do that. The cooler heads prevailed on this, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you have Pelosi out there, you know, talking about how you know, Trump potentially may not relinquish power in 2020, but then she's out there, you know, in the same day or the same 24 or 36 hour period, you know, saying that, basically saying like, yes, impeachment is not smart for the Democrats. She says it's bad for the country, but that's, you can tell that that's not what she's thinking. And she basically says that that Trump is trying to goad her into impeaching her. And there's some truth to that, you know, and Pelosi herself has been relatively disciplined on all this. But like, I don't know if that's Trump's plan, like there's no shortage of people who are cooperating with it.
Well, I mean, I think he's playing into their sort of desires to satisfy the base and satisfy people like Tom Steyer. I mean, this is not 4D chess, like just so the militant grugs out there who are committed to like not understanding the context of what we're discussing here. I mean, this is, Trump is trying to create this impeachment narrative to improve his election chances and negate any need to do anything meaningful on any of his other promises, which his Jewish constituents don't want. They don't want action on immigration. They don't want immigration levels decreased. They don't want any of these things that he's doing. And so this is the impeachment thing is the way that he can sort of sell this to the base, because you can't sell them a wall again, right? And you can't sell them a lot of the bullshit about, oh, we need to do E-Verify and all this other stuff, like all these things that brought people out to the polls in 2016. He can't do that again. So he's got to do impeachment. Like you were saying, like Mike had said, was, you know, oh, you gotta, if they remove me from office. And it is a powerful argument, because look at what stands on the other side. I mean, look at, it's Pelosi and Biden.
Yeah.
And
well, first and foremost, you know, and it's, saw an poll from the Daily Caller. It's like, who do you most hold in contempt? You know, and it's like Trump, Barr, and then Schiff and Nadler, and of course the two Democrats, you know, won out far and away. But it's like, Daily Caller, how's it going there, big guy? Or, you know, as I've said, like those two are just getting sloppy. Like, first and foremost, what's on the other side is those two fucking Jews.
Yeah, and I mean, if your goal was to win a landslide election, like put yourself in Donald Trump's shoes for a second, and you wanted to just sweep the nation, even against all the demographic odds that you might face, then you do everything. You do immigration, because it's not an incorrect strategy. Trump's not wrong here to do this impeachment bit. Like, it would be bad to go to talk about the issues. Like, it's, I think we made this call a couple weeks ago that we said when the Mueller probe ends, it's actually beneficial for us, because then it forces the racial stuff to come back to the forefront. This impeachment's a distraction. It becomes a distraction. It's not really what the issues are about. It's not really what divides the country is the impeachment of Donald Trump. What divides the country is the destruction of a place that used to be mostly white, that was good in many ways, had a lot of problems, fraught with a lot of controversy, and of course had this elite ruling over it for far too long. But the impeachment or not impeachment and all this other garbage, it's a distraction. it's totally a distraction. So if I were the president and putting myself in his shoes, I would pursue an all about, and I wanted to win big. I would be working every, I would have the big Bannon whiteboard and be trying to cross those things off, except for, you know, the Jerusalem embassy, of course, but all the immigration stuff. But instead it's like, delegate to Kushner and you get a bill that, and you come out and you reverse your position on legal immigration. I mean, it's like, dude, I mean, what are you doing here, guy? But of course he thinks he can just win on the impeachment issue. So why bother doing anything else? Plus he doesn't want to piss off all the donors either. Right.
Yeah. No, donors that he's now going to be trying to appeal to using incumbency to do so. I was reading an article about some big shindig somewhere in DC, that a lot of these people were attending. And I was like, yeah, I certainly believe that, but I don't know how much success he's going to enjoy with that. Yeah, I mean, it definitely benefits him politically. Like I said, you know, Pelosi seems to be aware of this, but you know, her statement about him goading the House Democrats to impeach him. I mean, here it is, right here. I have it.
Do it up,
and then we can.
And I have said the president is goading us into, wants to goad us into impeachment because that he knows, as do I, that. That's not a good thing for the country. Well, maybe he knows that, but he knows that I think that. Let's put it that way. He knows that I think that. But the point is that every single day, whether it's obstruction of having people come to the table with facts, ignoring subpoenas and the rest, every single day, the president is making a case. He's becoming self-impeachable in terms of some of the things that he is.
Well, let's pause there. That's an important point you just made.
Self-impeachable.
Yeah, it's very important and very cogent. I mean, look, I'm not going to lie. It's not difficult for me to sort of take the administration's side in this. Like, this has been going on for 2 years. You know, my nice new shiny attorney general. You're holding him in contempt. You want him impeached. I see, you know, Robert Reich and all these other people are talking about, you know, how do we put this guy in jail? Because he hasn't sent you like literally every last character in the Mueller report. Like, yeah, I mean, they're kind of asking for it.
Yeah, well, and that's the whole thing. I mean, I think, and it's funny listening to Pelosi because she sort of plays it like Donald knows that this will be bad for the country, so that's what he's doing. She sort of plays it like I've come to this decision on impeachment ultimately because I care about you, Goyim. Like, I don't want this country to be in a bad place, so ultimately I made the decision because I care about the welfare of the United States and all of the people in it that we're not going to impeach the president because that would be bad. It's like, no, it's a political decision. First of all, you don't have the popular support to do it. Otherwise, you would have pulled the trigger on it. Furthermore, you realized after all the polls came in that people in general really don't want this. I saw a poll, I think it was from the Daily Caller, that said something like 57% of Democrats want to do impeachment and think Trump committed a crime. I mean, those aren't really good numbers when you're polling Democrats only. So she isn't really doing what's best for the country. Obviously, she's doing just what's politically in her best interest. And so that's the push and pull, right? And as far as Barr goes, I don't know what this guy's going to do. I think they don't really know what this guy's going to do. It seems like, you know, look, what we laid out in the last couple of episodes is that Barr is not Trump's guy. Barr is not our guy. Barr is a guy who wants to, you know, get rid of a lot of the problems within the FBI and some of these other agencies that he doesn't like. But ultimately, I don't, you know, and they don't like that because they want to ensure that a Donald Trump can never happen again. And having control of these agencies in the way that they do is the insurance plan, regardless of what people think about demographics and then the impossibility of another. You know, someone like Trump coming along, maybe somebody a lot better than Trump coming along. They don't want to take that chance. And yeah, so no,
they thought they were good, but they realized that they left a few things to chance and just, you know, sort of by sheer luck, things happened in just the wrong way to bite them in the ass.
Well, none of the hedges worked, right? Like, none of the insurance policies worked. Like, they thought that the primary process and their complete control of all the donors would have worked to prevent Trump from ever becoming the, you know, winning the primaries. Nobody thought that that was going to happen. And they thought that the nominating process was going to be another way that they could get rid of it. Then they threw all kinds of shit at this guy. And then he got elected, and they thought, well, the last ditch effort is just, you know, accuse the guy of a crime and, you know, get a special counsel in there. And ultimately, they have succeeded at undermining his presidency to the point where, you know, he's basically just become another Republican. I mean, look at the disaster on the border, and we're doing this bit on impeachment. I mean, do we really think that they wouldn't have done this? I mean, I think that they would have tried this special counsel shit on anybody who somehow won, because the whole plan all along was to ensure that it's never going to happen again. Doesn't matter whether it's Donald Trump, doesn't matter whether it's Mitt Romney. And, you know, I think they're making doubly sure right now it's never going to happen again. Demographics.
Yeah, well, and it's probably not a bad idea, because for all Trump's faults, I mean, the value of him in 2020 is that him winning again could potentially break the back of the coalition of the ascendant and send, you know, things into serious disarray.
It could. Yeah. And I don't know, you know, to what extent how much he's going to bend over backwards for them. I mean, he seems to be doing it so far to a certain extent, because I think the extent that, you know, the Zio shill, and this is not plan trusting either, but I do think the extent to which the Zio shill, the complete capitulation transformation, is complete is a little bit overblown, because if you put yourself in the position of the neocons and like all these other, what are they getting? I mean, yeah, they're getting a lot of Jewish shit in Israel for sure. But like I said, Assad's still alive. They didn't get a coup in Venezuela. There's no American military in Venezuela. Like, Maduro's still in power. I mean, if you're one on their side, they're not getting anything that they want. So it would be far better to have Biden in there, who would give them fucking everything. A butt plug would give them fucking everything. I think the only person that might, if Bernie won the nomination, I think they would probably break Bernie, unfortunately, in the end too. But anybody is better than Trump at this point in terms of achieving their goals. They're like foreign policy goals anyway.
Yeah, I mean, sort of until further notice, in my assessment, the value of Trump is entirely metapolitical.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. No, because look at the border. 168,000 people released into the country in April. I mean, there's no real political benefit at all. I mean, the biggest benefit is to show MAGApedes all the failures and sort of divorce them from this like cheap, superficial notion that we have to beat the left on impeachment and then we've won. It's like, no, you haven't. It's like, you're still on the same ship that is still taking in the same amount of water, if not more, because you could even make the argument that Trump has made the crisis on the border worse. We've made that argument before.
Yeah, no, it's not difficult to do.
Yeah. I mean, these MAGApedes have to be divorced from this idea that the impeachment equals total victory. It's just not. It may, to the extent that it gets you some salt from the left, and it may, and Trump may have to do some things in order to get reelected that are beneficial. But this all goes back to this piece on, he's not ideologically motivated. If he were ideologically motivated, like I sort of laid out, if I were in the shoes of the president, I would be doing all of the things that need to get done, except for shit for Israel. I would not be doing that. But I would be doing this impeachment bit because it's good. It's good strategy. but I'd also be doing all the immigration stuff, because that's ultimately what people want. He wouldn't have to do the impeachment thing if there was a wall going up. He wouldn't have to do the impeachment thing if he had jammed immigration down the throat of Paul Ryan from fucking zero. But instead we got this. So he's got to do this cheap, shitty, superficial, like, I beat the left through, you know, owning them on impeachment. That's not real. It doesn't benefit the country. No, actually, you know what? Nancy Pelosi's right. It actually doesn't benefit the country at all. Because there's no, she's right in her own wrong way, if you catch what I mean. Like, this superficial, like, we got to stop the impeachment bit, it's not benefiting anybody. What are we getting out of that transaction other than a clown show, which is what it is? It's just a clown show. I mean, it's, you know, it shouldn't be lost on people with Schiff and Nadler and all that. And that's sort of fun to watch. There's some benefit from that. But ultimately, this doesn't benefit anybody. I mean, unless which you're never going to see. But unless you get like Peter Strzok and McCabe and Comey and others, you know, being frog marched out of their homes like Roger Stone was, there's no benefit to this. What is there? Nobody's learning a lesson.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean, unfortunately, I do doubt that those things are going to happen. But
no way.
Reserve judgment on what Barr is planning on doing until I see a little bit more. I mean, by no means am I plan trusting, but yeah. I mean, before we go on to some of the foreign policy developments and immigration, which we seem to be gravitating towards. So the House Judiciary Committee has voted 24-16 to hold Attorney General William Barr in contempt of Congress. This is not for him not showing up. It's because he did not deliver every last shred of the Mueller report, including things that are subject to grand jury guidelines and regulations and so on and so forth.
So that's the committee. There's going to be a full House vote at some point. The article that I read was not very clear about that. It just said they voted to hold him in contempt, and there'll be a vote in the whole House at a later date. So I don't know if that's ever going to get picked up. I don't know if Pelosi wants to do that. I mean, if she wants to play along with Trump's impeachment game, but she's stuck between a rock and a hard place too,
yeah,
right?
It's going to be, I would very much like to be a fly on the wall in the closed door meeting, because it most assuredly will be closed door where she's pleading that case.
Yeah.
Anyway, here was Mr. Nadler talking. He was talking about the Constitution and Ben Franklin and all this other shit. It's like, I don't even want to hear those such things coming out of your filthy Jew mouth.
We've talked for a long time about approaching a constitutional crisis. We are now in it. We are now in a constitutional crisis. Benjamin Franklin in 1787 was asked, when he exited the Constitutional Convention, what type of government have you given us, sir? And he said, by a woman who asked him the question, he said, a republic, ma'am, if you can keep it. Now is the time of testing whether we can keep a republic, or whether this republic is destined to change into a different, more tyrannical form of government, as other republics have over the centuries. We must resist this. This is far broader than Republican or Democratic or even the rights of Congress. This is whether we can put limits on the power of the president, any president, and then executive branch, and hold the president, any president, accountable. That's what is at stake here. We cannot flinch, and we will not flinch.
Yeah, these are like the shadows in the cave. Like, this is what the, I mean, before we slip into tyranny, like, how is it not tyrannical already, Gerald Nadler? Like, how is it not tyrannical already? I mean, look at you, first of all. I mean, you know, these republics, these broad, you know, it's like slipped away into the century. It's like, what the fuck is this guy talking about? They only slip away. They only break down because people like you were involved, guy.
Yeah, I know Franklin fancied himself, you know, to be quite the cosmopolitan, but like he has, he did say anti-Semitic stuff here and there. I want to say.
Yeah, he did. And the other good thing about Ben Franklin, I mean, especially from doing the deep dive we did on the Constitution, I mean, all these guys were corrupt and dirty and had, you know, very perverse financial interests. But Ben Franklin, unless all the records were, you know, suspiciously burned, that guy did not have any corrupt, perverse financial interests. He's like the cleanest guy in Congress back then. So regardless of anything else he's ever said, I mean, I love the anti-Semitism, of course, but the fact that he had no financial interest in like wanting to do certain things, I mean, his positions, as far as I'm concerned, were pretty unmolested.
Yeah. Yeah, he is, it's always been one of my more favorite figures in, you know, early American lore. I mean, hell, I assume there's some reason they put him on the $100 bill.
Yeah. Well, the impeachment push and pull is not all a cave shadow show or whatever. It sounds like over 100 people at CNN have lost their job now that the Mueller report and everything.
I saw a figure closer to 300 going around today.
Oh, wow. So, well, this article from yesterday is more than 100 jobs. So, I mean, more than 100 could potentially work its way up to 300, I guess.
Oh, yeah, man. It's like, what is the point of these articles? It's like, who exactly do you think is going to be, you know, feeling bad out there, just like fretting over the loss of these people's jobs?
Nobody. And wow, I'm looking at this now. I didn't realize this. I heard McNabb talking about this a little bit, but throughout the last month, CNN averaged only 767,000 primetime viewers. Bruh,
there was an article, I think it was like a couple weeks ago, that Tucker Carlson literally beat their entire fucking primetime lineup.
I was just going to say, that's like one third or like one quarter of Tucker's lineup. I mean, that's insane. That's crazy. Well, it's not that crazy. I mean, they predicated, I mean, you know, regardless of what you think about real politics and the impeachment and the Mueller report, I mean, that is... They did really create an entire industry around that. I think I have repeated this statistic before, but I have confirmed it, and it is true. It's 500,000 articles in news stories on Trump Russia. I mean, think about that product. It's like, you know, here's sensational Russia story. Enjoy product. Be excited for next product. I mean, that was a whole thing. That's how Rachel Maddow, I mean, I know she's on a different network, but this is CNN's whole bit. And I noticed, because I consume a lot of mainstream media for the purpose of this show only. I do that as a service to the audience, of course. It's a sacrifice on my part, I know, because it's really psychologically, you know, it's a very difficult endeavor. But I will say...
You need to be a highly trained media specialist.
That's right. That's right. But I have my finger on the pulse. And I noticed in the last 2 weeks that there's sort of just like all the oxygen has been let out of the room on a lot of this stuff. I noticed like daytime CNN is back to talking about shit that they would focus on in the pre-Trump days, like before he even existed. In other words, they've gone back to the things that they thought would be really exciting and interesting that don't have anything to do with Trump. So they're sort of flailing their arms and trying different strategies, but in the meantime,
they really need a mysterious plane crash to talk about for fucking like
Malaysia
70 days.
Yeah, well, they're in luck. I mean, Boeing has come up with the 737 Max, and there are non-white pilots all over the world just waiting to not read the manuals and crash them into the ground. So yeah, they have nothing to wait for. And in the meantime, like Jeffrey Zucker has decided to get very lean in his establishment at CNN. 300 people who are all, I guess, signing up for accounts on Data Camp to learn how to code. so there we go. There is one bright spot in all of this.
Yeah.
But the media was was dying anyway, though. Remember, I mean, Mike's talked about this before. Like, we talked about this, too, which is that before Trump came along, like, all this is what the big thing was with the alternative media and the rise of Breitbart. Some of it had to do with the fact that, you know, the mainstream, you know, ABC, CBS, NBC, New York Times, whatever, they're not telling people the truth. But a lot of it had to do with the fact that this whole industry was just dying. And I think, you know, now that a lot of the fuel has run out of the afterburners on this stuff, it's going to continue to sort of proceed in this natural decay, which is probably what we're seeing. I think we will live long enough to see CNN and some of these networks actually fold up or at least merge into like one thing, but we'll see.
Yeah, who knows how that's going to play out. I mean, the entire media landscape is who knows what sort of transformation the entire thing is going to, you know, undergo in the coming decade, not just news, but entertainment, you know, if cable bundles and all that stuff are out the window, then
it's just all
going to off.
It's all going to be owned by Amazon in like 10 years. It's just going to be everything's Amazon. Whole Foods, your newspaper, your news feed, Facebook. All this shit is just going to be like one big Amazon, you know, product. Jeff Bezos sitting at the top. Well, actually, he'll probably be gone. It'll be somebody else. Somebody else a little bit with a more of a nose for this kind of business.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. Although I find Bezos' appearance very disconcerting, dude. I mean, I don't it's like, I don't know. I've looked into the issue with his eye and it's, you know, there's all sorts of theories out there, but it looks like, you know, it looks like it's glass and it looks like it's threatening to like pop out and roll across the floor and stop at my feet.
I don't know, man. I mean, I don't blame his wife for looking for greener pastures. That's for sure. I mean, you know, money only, you know, buys you very little in the way of sustainability when you're looking at a guy like Jeff Bezos. So
yeah, plus it's like now you can go and take your rightful place in some like Lolita Express 2.0 shit.
Oh man, well, where do we pivot from Lolita Express, Halvorsham? I don't really know. You want to do Iran, Venezuela, or you want to do immigration stuff or something else?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we can get through Iran, Venezuela. So yeah, I heard the tedious guys talking about this. We're sending the Abraham Lincoln carrier strike group over to the Med, you know, and then probably go through the Suez. Well, yeah, that's kind of the only way to get from that one place to the other. You know, and this is all based on some excellent, credible intel that we've gotten from our greatest ally, of course, planning to attack U.S. assets in the Middle East op area, Fifth Fleet.
Yeah, we have great intel on things that aren't happening in the Middle East, things that aren't being committed by Iran in any sort of way, but we have zero intel on what's going on down at the border. Just confusion. Just you get numbers at the end of the day. We get the tallies. Could you imagine if we just got the tallies of the things that never happened in the Middle East? You just said these things happen. I mean, they can't really do that, but yeah, this is the thing. And this is the thing. You puts Pompeo, and they had to rebalance the aircraft if they put Pompeo on it, because it's like, Jesus Christ, we got to remove a bunch of cargo and luggage to fit Pompeo on the airplane. But they get him over there in 24 hours to go to Iraq and respond to these very specific imminent threats that totally aren't happening and aren't being committed by anybody. But you got to make a big deal out of this, right? The carrier group, by the way, I have these dutiful written notes from our good friend Ethnarch here. Apparently, the carrier group was already in the Med and it was just transitioned over to the Persian Gulf a couple days early. So yeah, Mike was talking about how it takes a while to mobilize one of these things. It is true, but it was already over there for training and they sort of just said, all right, you're going to go down the canal and go over to the Gulf and, you know, act threatening, and we'll have Pompeo go over there too. So the jury's out whether this is Bolton driving this or whether it's a Bolton Trump Kushner trifecta. But yeah, this is not good. Nobody wants this. Nobody gives a shit about this. And it's not like we don't have a bunch of other problems to deal with, like the border crisis or an opioid crisis or, you know, just make me a fucking list. Iran is not the thing we need to be worrying about. And no, neither is Venezuela, by the way. So I'm glad that failed, too.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say Pompeo was all over the Sunday television programs.
Of course.
Mostly talking about our little attempted misadventure in Venezuela, which everyone now acknowledges was just like fake and gay as fuck. But there's something about Pompeo that I find very unsettling. I'm not really sure what it is.
Well, he was just a congressman. He was a congressman that got pulled into this position. He was over at CIA and then he got put in at state. I mean, he's never done much remarkable in his life.
There's something. Yeah. So that's the other. It's like there's clearly something about this guy that Trump was like, you know, I like this guy. The cut of this guy's jib has the Trump brand written all over it. And like I said, I just find him unsettling. His voice is kind of gay, quite frankly. He looks unhealthy.
Well, he's a literally who prior to 2011. He was elected to the House in 2011. He was there until 2017. And he's another. See, this is a pattern. This is worthy of a deep dive on the history and like why this is happening. But this is another guy from, I mean, he was born in California. I don't know how he ended up in Kansas, but here's another guy. He represented the 4th District of Kansas, which I don't have in front of me right now, but it looks like it's a very rural south central district in Kansas. It is 83% white, 6% black, 6% Hispanic, and like whatever else. Anyway, the point is that here's another one of these deeply committed neocons from a place in the country that should not have any of that. We should have the Republican sort of counterweight to like a Kamala Harris or something.
He should be a firebrand.
Yes. This should be like a Steve King. But this is a distinct pattern within the Republican Party. And I'll repeat this again for the Grugs, for those of you out in Rio Grande later. Not necessarily synonymous with Grugs, but the whole package. Look at all the senators from like deep red states. Look at all these members of Congress, with few exception, from deep red states. They are right in line with guys like Mitt Romney and some of these. And it's not an accident. So you have Mike Pompeo just get pulled right into the CIA. Like what experience does this guy have to lead the CIA other than he can be controlled? That's all you have to have on your resume. Mike Pompeo's resume is a nice, neat one pager. I can be controlled by you, Shlomo. And that's it. That's all he had to say. Yeah. Prod him right to the top.
Well, like the two failed Fed appointees. Yeah, you raise an interesting point. It is either literally who or this guy that I saw on the TV.
Well, so here, I'm looking into this a little bit more. Oh, God. Of course, I dude. He looks like he had a relationship with Bain Capital. Of course, Mitt Romney. But he was also like deeply immersed in the military industrial complex. He sold his interest in Thayer, which was a business that worked with Lockheed Martin, Gulfstream Aerospace, Cessna Aircraft, Boeing, Sprint Aerosystems, Raytheon, and others. So this is why they love this guy. He's basically like a Dick Cheney, but, you know, just like pull him right up to the top. He knows everything we need to know, you know, so.
Yeah. Oh, a cooperative effort between all the big boys in the military industrial. Yeah. What you just read reads to me like everyone ended up very well healed, and we did not make any sort of quality product for our soldiers, sailors, and airmen in the field.
Well, he's also affiliated with the evangelical church. So this is yet another reason why, you know, our greatest ally stuff is right at home with this guy. just you know, and this is one of the other reasons why a lot of these guys get elected to Congress, and they are sort of fostered because you get a guy who will live and breathe his entire life for Israel and do every bit because it's part of his religious conviction. They love guys like this from the heartland, and this whole thing just needs to be stamped out. And of course, now you have Pompeo. Now you have this guy. I mean, I'd have to do some digging, but how many people have gone straight from Congress to CIA director and then Secretary of State? Like, it's quite a leap.
No, there's not. You don't. I mean, aside from running for another higher elective office, like, no, the House of Representatives is not historically a springboard for anything except running for senator, like maybe governor.
Yeah,
but maybe. More important, like, you know, statewide office. You know, you can be the state attorney general or whatever. But yeah, there's no. I think we had one president who was a member of the House, and then that's all that he was. I think we had one of those.
Yeah, yeah. I want to say, wasn't Dick Cheney? He's very similar to Pompeo from a neighboring state. I think Cheney was only
he ended up getting a House seat in I think Wyoming, like his daughter.
And she's being groomed, and she's being groomed too.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. But I mean, as far as positions in government go, nah, I think Cheney had a pretty long rap sheet.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. It's a little bit different than Pompeo. A little bit different. But look at all the, I mean, Pompeo is another example of just this garbage detritus that gets pulled up. And you know, that was also a problem created by Trump being an imperfect candidate, imperfect in the sense that he's got a lot of other baggage, is that people didn't want to work for the administration. People that were clean and wanted, I mean, I'm sure there were a lot of great people on the sidelines that would have loved to work for the administration, but they were frozen out. But the neocons and the shills aren't going to shy away from this because it's an opportunity for them to control the president and can, you know, manipulate foreign policy. And look at Pompeo and Bolton. Look what they've done. They know they've got a partner in Jared Kushner. Absolutely. And they found a partner in Donald Trump because they have figured out a way to sell neoconservatism in a way that gets Donald Trump donor support and gets him upcomings by Fox News. That's the trick, right?
Yeah. Speaking of Mike, Shlomo is a friend of mine, Pompeo. You want to talk about this Reuters article?
Sure. Let's do it.
So this is from Reuters. The U.S. may review ties with countries deemed anti-Israel. This is from the U.S. envoy. The United States may review its ties with countries it deems as being anti-Israel after what a U.S. envoy said on Sunday was a shift in policy toward equating anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said in a March speech that anti-Zionism, opposition to Israel's existence as a homeland for the Jewish people, was a form of anti-Semitism or hostility towards Jews that was on the rise worldwide and that Washington would fight it relentlessly. I'm going to agree with Moik here and say he's not wrong. Anyway, the State Department Special Envoy for Monitoring and Combating Anti-Semitism, Elon Carr, this individual said the United States is willing to review its relationship with any country, and certainly anti-Semitism on the part of a country with whom we have a relationship is a deep concern, he told Reuters during a visit to Israel. Carr said the administration's equating of anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism certainly breaks new ground by making clear that something that a lot of us who are involved in the Jewish world and a lot of us who are proponents of a strong U.S.-Israel relationship have known for quite some time, and that it is that one of the chief flavors of anti-Semitism in the world today is the flavor that conceals itself under anti-Zionism.
All flavors. We are canceling all flavors of this lineup. And the people who are involved in the Jewish world, man, isn't that an understatement? Involved. Involved, that's what you call it. You're involved. Give me a fucking break. And that's the thing. I mean, yeah, this is like, there's this coalition of countries around the world who don't, like, anti-Zionism used to be a sort of a safer place. Now they want to cut that off, too. So not only, you know, anti-Semitism, but isn't it sort of the same thing? Isn't, like, anti-Semitism sort of become that? I mean, it's essentially any discussion of these people or the country that they're trying to create for themselves in an ethnically pure way, any criticism of that whatsoever, you can't even talk about it unless it's in glowing terms, right? It's like it's the model for everything. You can't just be silent on the issue of trannies and you know, integration in schools or whatever. You have to be a passionate supporter of it. And that's what's next. If you're not out there doing the Mike Pompeo, like, evangelical Christian, like, I love Israel, Israel is like more, I put Israel above my own religion, you're an anti-Semite and you will be crushed. And that's the whole thing. This is just as Stryker likes to say, this is an escalation. It is an escalation. We're going to slowly define all these terms under the umbrella of anti-Semitism. And if you're, you know, if you don't have a chair when the music stops, well, fuck you.
Yeah, it is an escalation, but like so many of these things, our friends are escalating. I'm sort of left wondering, like, do they really have much of a choice at this point?
Yeah. Well,
it's like everything's kind of locked in. This collision course that we're all on is like locked in.
Well, it's part of their sort of like rhetorical Ponzi scheme, right? Like they have to start defining things in these terms because they're running out of like more reasonable ways of convincing people. Like it doesn't work anymore to just be like, guys, it's not nice to be rude to the Jews. Like, can you guys just stop? Can you guys just be nice? Can we all just be nice? It's like,
come on, man. They only use live ammo on like 40 people.
Yeah. Yeah. So and this is the push to try to own Venezuela. It's the push to try to, drive Iran's oil exports to zero. It's the way that they want to screw with North Korea. And this is just a pattern. And this is also why they're anti-Russia. And that's why I still think, at least to the extent that it's a real narrative. I mean, this whole Russia Trump impeachment garbage, Russia is just another proxy in this, like, to go after Russia, because Russia is another one of these countries that's a member of this coalition who more or less does not want to put up with this like Western Jewish bullshit.
Yeah, no, you cannot have examples of countries, you know, out there that are white and that are even trying to mount a defense against Globo Homo, and we've been saying this for a long time, because people are going to be like, hey, man, why can't we have that?
Well, and they have to work really hard to do it with Russia, too, right? Like, it's not hard to make North Korea seem like a foreign thing that nobody likes. But that's why those girls singing during the Olympics was so endearing. Like, people loved that because it was like, holy shit, this is like breaking the narrative of like what we've been told about this oppressive starvation regime that you're told the same thing about, whether it's North Korea or whether it's Venezuela or whatever. They have a very difficult time telling that story about Russia, because it's like, wow, like if you actually look into the data, you know, yes, churches are emptying out all across Europe because, you know, things have become secularized and everything else. But the one place where Christianity is actually like growing by like 0.1% is Russia. And it's like, you know, Putin looks at Russia as being this sort of last bastion of this sort of thing for Christianity, regardless of what you think about Christianity. Like, it's a purposeful thing. It's great. But it's very difficult for them to create this, Russia's meddling in our election. It's just like, just fuck off with that. And I mean, when you start looking at all the people who left Russia 100 years ago and are now here doing this shit, Adam Schiff, Gerald Nadler, David Axelrod, it's like, man, what's the fucking pattern? It's not just that they're Jews. It's just that they all came from there at the same time, and now they're doing this shit here.
Yeah, doing the bit, you know, Russia or Poland or Hungary, you know, you see these pictures, you know, people are out at night, they're smiling, they're having a good time, they're not being accosted by fucking, you know, degenerates or brown people. Like, you have kids playing in parks, you know, at dusk.
Yeah. Enjoying themselves. What America, small town America, used to be like in the 1980s.
You can't be having that, you know, in you know, when you're pushing consume Globo Homo product, get excited for next Globo Homo product. And by the way, you probably just won't even want to leave your house soon. Good thing Amazon will just be like dropping shit from drones down your fucking chimney.
Well, that's an advantage if you don't want to get trampled by didn't do nothings at Walmart. I mean, you know, but at the same time, it's one of these things, like, it used to be an enjoyable experience to go shopping and see your friends and neighbors. You know, they were talking about this on Tedious a while ago about this sort of synthesizing the town centers now because downtown areas have become so shitty.
Yeah.
And like, soon town centers will go the way it's like it went from nice old fashioned downtown shopping to strip malls now to town centers are going to be the thing that goes the way of the dodo bird, like malls. It's like nobody wants to go there because non-whites are fucking it up. Oh, man.
Yeah. Places, you know, places that are nice and should be nice, you know, on which a lot of money was spent maybe, you know, 15, 20 years ago or even 10 years ago. And it's just like, yeah, I don't want to be here. Like, you know, I'm not. Some people might think that I'm like agoraphobic, and it's like, no, dude, I don't want to be in these places, like looking at these people, listening to them, contending with their bullshit. Like, I just don't.
No, it used to be an enjoyable experience. Now it's not. Hence, rapid product that you should be excited about delivery service. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, all those like dead mall websites like documenting that phenomenon. It's like, bro, everyone knows why this happened.
Yeah. Yeah. This is not a big mystery. And it's also, you know, they were talking of today because of the events of today. I actually got to listen to most of Tedious before we did FTN, which is always my goal. Because I don't want to double dip on some of these subjects. But yeah, it's also the, you know, there's a lot of, go listen to it if you haven't already, especially the first half on the sort of the abandonment of the commons. It's a phenomenon that has occurred, but it's also beneficial because they don't want white people like enjoying themselves in public and talking and interacting with each other and building bonds with each other, because, you know, sooner or later, then people are going to start talking about politics. And people are going to start talking about noticing things that are outside of the accepted narrative.
And then, blah, 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 Prussian blue.
Yeah, essentially. Yes. And and it's especially dangerous for their situation now, because like we just said at the beginning of the show, 767,000 people are watching CNN. There's 330 million people in this country. And I would say, what, 200 million, 200 plus million are white. So that means like virtually nobody is watching CNN. Almost nobody is plugged into this shitty narrative that they have. I mean, now, while that small number of people are watching CNN, an untold number of people are sort of plugged into the narrative via Facebook and like whatever else. But imagine if these people were just like disconnected from the social media cancer and the television cancer, and then they started interacting with one another on like a more traditional basis. You know, the way that we did growing up. Now I sound like a fucking old man, but you know, 20 years ago, the way that we interacted.
Yeah, no, I mean, dude, we're not talking about, you know, it's like, I swear, sometimes I probably do sound like an 80-year-old man, you know, pining for the 1950s or whatever. But it's like, no, dude, I'm just talking about like 1995.
Yeah, not that long ago, 2002, actually. I mean, you go back far enough. You know, you don't have to go back that far. You don't even have to go back 20 years to be in a place where text messages were something that you barely did. And there was no Facebook, there was no Twitter, there was no social media, there was internet, but it was not your like primary means of communicating with other people. And no, that's
when you had to actually do the alphanumeric thing. I never fucking texted anybody.
No, it's like, bro, like, why would you do that? What's the point of that? You could just call, or it's more efficient to just call. And then it certainly sort of became something else.
But dude, I was in Baltimore one day with a fucking cabbie. You know, and he's like zipping through the streets of Baltimore and he has an old school phone. He's doing the texting with the number bit like faster than I could do it with a keyboard with one hand as we're like zipping in and out of traffic. The guy obviously was fucking white.
Oh, he was white.
Yeah.
Oh, this fucks up my narrative, because I think that's like how Africans and other people who can only afford like $2 cell phones in these other countries, that's how they do text. That's how they communicate on social media, because like they don't like that's how it works, right? Like when you turn in your phone to the cell phone company, like they refurbish it and sometimes just sell it back to like, you know, illegal immigrants and whatever in the United States. But the ones that have gotten, you know, really bad, like your old StarTech is probably like somewhere in Nigeria right now being used by somebody, you know, or like whatever your Razor phone is somehow connecting to the internet.
Yeah, that's a good narrative, but no, this guy was he was impressive.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I just no thanks. Not gonna do that. So what else? Where are we at here?
Well, you want to talk about the census and maybe immigration and then head to the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, we gotta talk about the census because our buddy Frontierland did this fantastic meme, which you haven't seen yet, that I haven't gotten to use. And in order for us to use it for our cover art, we have to talk about the census. So the census, as I had to sort of refresh where we are on the census. So the census question on citizenship, which is before the Supreme Court. And my understanding is so far only oral arguments have taken place, and the oral arguments have been you know, pretty good. It seems to indicate that the court is going to rule in favor of the Trump administration on the census question. And for those of you out in Rio Rhinelander, it's essentially putting this question back on the census that says, are you a U.S. citizen, yes or no? That was there for a long time until it wasn't. And now all of a sudden, it's like, you know, this huge, horrible issue. And the arguments before the court, New York versus U.S. Department of Commerce, which I guess does the census. And
Yeah, that's why they've been after Wilbur Ross.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was not done well. I mean, the administration, this is another bungle. And now they have, I think, Noel Francisco, who's been sort of a star player. They call him like the 10th justice of the Supreme Court.
The Solicitor General.
Yeah. Because he's sort of gotten involved now and is making a much more compelling argument before the court. And, you know, like some of the other, you know, members of the court are that don't want this are sort of like, whoa, what about Wilbur Ross, though? Because he's the one like that's been fucking it all up. So anyway, long and the short of it, this is probably going to get ruled on. But there was a poll out, which I seem to have lost now. Most Americans support citizenship question on the census, just like most Americans don't want more immigration. You never see those polls talked about. A majority of voters in a new poll say that a question about U.S. citizenship should be included on the 2020 census, an issue currently before justices on the Supreme Court. 6 in 10 registered voters in a Hill-Harris-X survey released Tuesday said the U.S. Census Bureau should ask the citizenship question even if it results in fewer responses. Now, that's the key, because the entirety of the New York argument is that, which is just a gay argument anyway, is that, oh no, I object to this question being added to the census because we might not have as many people answering it because they're illegal, but we're not going to say that.
Well, one of the things that happened during arguments was, I want to say it was Gorsuch that did this. He pointed out that apparently under the model that Wilbur Ross has submitted or whatever, it's literally the last fucking question. And never mind like Beaner's, like there's almost nobody answering anymore at that point.
There's almost nobody.
Which he points out.
Yeah, and that's the thing is like if these people are going to abscond from answering the census, they're not going to like get to the last question and be like, uh-oh, they're going to see a representative from the United States government, even if it's like, you know, some, you know, hipster like black census worker, which they always seem to be, like just some fucking like shit heel coming to bang on your door from the census. They're going to run away. They don't want to talk to you. They're not going to answer the question anyway. Any interaction with the government at all is, I mean, whether these people are legal or not legal, even when they're legal, like they don't want to talk to the government because they fear, perhaps irrationally, because our government, don't worry, Juan, nobody's going to come take you away. Like if you can produce some paperwork, like you're going to be just fine. They won't even take you away. No, I mean, if you
the administration, one of the arguments is like, if you answer this question, you know, accurately, it will not be used to initiate deportation proceedings. I have no fucking doubt that that's the case.
Dude, they're not even going to deport you for any reason. You're not going to get deported for any reason. Why would you get deported? Like, you have to go commit rape, okay? So I understand a lot of them are rapists, and maybe that's, like, the problem here as well. It's like, oh, they'll find out that I've been doing the raping if I interact with anybody. But, yeah.
Plus, I also have two misdemeanors and a Class C felony.
So this is wildly popular. That should have no bearing on the court, but it usually does. But the argument against this is also weak. Like, you know, people aren't going to answer the question. It's like, well, that is what they fear, though, because for those of you out in Rhinelander, the results of this census determine how congressional districts are allocated. It determines how money is allocated. It determines a lot of different things. Now, the one
Once again, it's like every other thing in our society at this point, like it's essentially a racial struggle.
Well, so that's one downside. So the one downside of having the citizenship question on there and the suppression of these Hispanics is it gives this artificial sense that the country is whiter than it is, right? Like it gives this artificial sense that the country is whiter than it is. And it also gives the artificial sense that there aren't that many law breaking Mexicans and Central Americans here. Cause it's like you don't actually know how many are there. Now, the only way to know is to go physically round them up and kick them out. Because there's no like other soft way of getting them to come answer questions and fill in a bubble on a sheet from the government. But that's a problem, too, is that you're going to see demographic statistics. Like if you go on Wikipedia and look up any town, city, county, whatever, all the statistics on demographics and income comes from the census. And it's always the most recent one. And it's going to give this false impression that a lot of these places are whiter than they are. And that's not really true because of how many illegals are in this country, which is probably upwards of 35 million. And it depends on what day you ask that question, because with Donald Trump's malfeasance on the border, tomorrow it'll be 35 million plus 100,000, right? Like, we just keep adding more.
Yeah, 35.1, 35.2, and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Okay, so we have a debt clock. Can we get, like, an illegal immigrant clock in Times Square that just shows the number of illegals crossing the border? Should have these clocks everywhere. I mean, if we had some sort of good propaganda, that's what we'd be doing. Sort of like that roll call sheet that Trump said when he got elected, but ultimately never materialized. Remember that report on immigrant crime that we were supposed to get? Where the fuck did that go?
Oh, yeah. There was supposed to be like a whole little office that was stood up to talk about that. I read an article about it. Not too long ago, but yeah, it seems to have all but disappeared. Yeah, all of these clocks, it's like, you know, it if I were a savvy GOP politician, I would be like, here's the number of you know, years projected or you know, real numbers of illegal beaners that is going to be required before the Republican Party can no longer win nationwide office or even statewide office in a lot of these swing states.
See, now,
like, literally nothing else matters.
No, it doesn't. Now, if I were designing a census, I would design the census in such a way where people do want to answer these questions. The most illegal people. And I would put out this very complicated, well, it doesn't have to be too complicated, propaganda that sort of indicates
just
that
fucking
if you
lie to them, tell them they're going to get something out of it. And well, then that's fucking snatch well, that's them
exact,
up.
Well, that's exactly where I'm getting. Because remember all this stuff about, you know, the health care and the Obamacare and all that stuff. We're going to start tracking who these people are. Yeah, I mean, that's a great way. Just give them Gibbs in exchange for filling out the census, and you're going to get all this stuff, and we've totally promised not to use any of this data for anything. We're going to burn it all at the end, right? And then you have their name and all their information, and then you just go deport them. That's what I would use the census for. The census is a way of registering for deportation.
What they were afraid was going to happen with all the fucking DACA applications. It's like, hey, that's a great idea, but I don't think you have, once again, I don't think you have much to worry about.
No concerns whatsoever. The worst thing you have to worry about is getting like extra SNAP benefits in your bank account every month. And that's going to be the thing that is probably going to happen. Nobody's coming to get you. Not at all. Unless you're an anti-Semite. If you happen to be an illegal immigrant who's an anti-Semite, you have to worry about being immediately deported.
I don't know. Unless you're a Muslim and a refugee and a woman and da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Shakes head back and forth in Indian. Yeah. Oh, man. Well, speaking of the border crisis, we're right there, aren't we? 40% of Guatemalans want to leave the country, poll finds. Pair that with survey. 1 million Guatemalans very likely to migrate to the U.S. This was out, I think, this week, right? Yeah. Survey by Prensa
it's been
Libre.
The rounds.
Survey by Prensa Libre, published on Thursday, found that 39% of Guatemalans intend to leave the country. Of those who said they wanted to leave, 85% picked the U.S. as the country they hoped to land in. Well, why wouldn't they? Trump isn't going to kick them out, and they're going to get tons of benefit. Why wouldn't they want to come here? I mean, remember these Gallup surveys that we talked about with, what, 800 million worldwide want to move somewhere else, and the top 9 places they want to move are like white countries, and the U.S. is, I think, number 1. So this isn't surprising.
Of course they are. They want to be oppressed. I mean, that's a kind of a shit tier meme, but like,
yeah, that's Rush Limbaugh has been doing that the last couple of weeks with the why would you? Oh, Eric Swalwell, why doesn't he go down to the border and tell people not to come here? Because it's a white supremacist country. It's like, shut the fuck up, Rush. Fuck, jerk off with this. Couldn't you come up with a better fair? No, you don't want to come up with a better narrative, because it's far better for conservatives and, you know, avid listeners, unironic supporters of the Rush Limbaugh program, to be lost in like dead end rhetoric of like, why doesn't Eric Shilwell go do something that's totally against his interests? Oh, man. So,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, I suppose it could be construed as a step in the right direction for it's like whatever just has these people thinking about race at this point is, I don't know, I suppose good enough for me.
Yeah, I guess so. But then the response from them is like, but we're not a white supremacist country. We love immigrants. We just don't want them to be illegal.
It's like all these Democrat-run cities. It's like, yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. Denver's been firmly in Democrat control for several decades now, if I'm correct on that. And yet it would seem that Western civilization is not literally grinding to a fucking halt there. What up with it?
No, neither was Minneapolis and neither was Portland. But these places are slowly changing. Especially Minneapolis filling up bulb heads, but they were working great. It's been Democrat control for forever. up there. And there hasn't been a problem until you start mixing things that don't belong there in the mix. So that's how it goes. But where do we go here? Poll results found other eyebrow-raising answers from everyday Guatemalans. What isn't an everyday Guatemalan? I guess the Jews that run the country there, right? Everybody else is just an everyday Guatemalan. Despite the dire situation in the country, 75% of respondents expressed, quote, little interest in politics. Nearly 90% did not align themselves with any political party, and 1 in 5 said that they would not be participating in the upcoming election on June 16th. Down there. I was like, well, what election would they be participating in here? Every one of them, right? Like,
yeah, I don't know. It's like, it's like the inverse of colonialism or anti-colonialism or whatever. It's like, well, if white people aren't going to come here and, you know, fix my country at gunpoint, which I'll feign indignance about, but really, you know, actually enjoy a substantive increase in my quality of life. Well, then I'm just going to go fucking beat down their door. It's like, yeah. it seems like there would be an easier way to do all this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's where Biden sort of comes into this whole thing, where he sort of said the first thing ever about immigration on the campaign trail, which is that we should send more money to Central America to solve the border crisis. And I mean, we've tried all this already and it doesn't work. The only thing that works is a wall and severely restrictive immigration policy that only allows people coming in from Europe. Everybody else is not allowed. That's the only thing that works. And if you break those laws, if you somehow find your way into our country, you're treated the way that they treat white people in this country for standing up for their own rights. And those people learn a very quick lesson. But
dude, installing me as president of Guatemala would be vastly more productive than Lunch Pail's plan to just send them more money.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, pay off this corrupt system that's already in place. I mean, not that we should be meddling with their country at all, but I mean, sending them more money does sort of placate part of the issue. But ultimately, the system, like those, all of those countries are far more overpopulated than they ever could be under an ideal system of government. So I don't know what you basically just have to like. Keep feeding these people. It's a never-ending process, and like the United States has been doing this for years. And I guess like if this sort of keeps these people in their own countries and you could afford to do it, it's kind of a really inefficient way of doing border security. But I think the easier way is just to close up shop for these other people and be like we were in the 1920s. That worked really well, but we don't have the political will to go back to that.
Yeah, I don't know. It's whatever the outcome is going to be, it's an untenable solution, which everyone seems to be realizing.
Yeah. Well, we're going to go to Albion Dispatches. We got a couple of black pills, gray pills, and white pills on immigration to hit very quickly when we come back. And then this crazy polling on the Democratic side, as well as some of the struggle session that continues between the candidates over there, at least the ones that the media wants you to focus on. So we'll be right back.
You're listening to the show that changed your weekend forever. Fash the Nation. Fash the Nation.
This is Atlas, and these are the Albion Dispatches, collected by Alfred the Average, documenting the oppression of native Britons by a hostile elite and its vibrant clients in the epicenter of Clanworld. Hello? Any Brexit news? No. Thank you. Next. Nigel is unhappy with Theresa May. Surprise, surprise. Speaking on Good Morning Britain, he slammed her failure to secure an exit and said the only reason she still leads the Conservatives is because Tory MPs have not got the backbone to get rid of her. She is without doubt not just the worst Prime Minister in my lifetime, but the most dishonest as well, he told presenters, and also said he doesn't think Westminster gets how angry this country is over the fact that Brexit has not yet materialised. his Brexit party advocate an immediate no-deal Brexit under World Trade Organization rules, fighting words for someone who cucks on everything but Brexit. Apparently Nigel is unhappy about Sargon being included by UKIP as a candidate for the EU Parliament elections. Addressing his candidacy and the use of Tommy Robinson as an advisor, Farage said, "I warned them last year, repeatedly, do not let the lunatic fringe, the criminal fringe, into the party. The sooner this election's over with and UKIP closes down, the better it will be. Wow, that'll make the journos like you, Nigel. A shekel for the good guy." May's troubles don't end with Nigel, however. She was told to resign by one of her own backbenchers during Prime Minister's questions and told to set out a roadmap showing when she will be stepping down, ahead of a meeting of the powerful 1922 committee of backbench MPs. But May continues to resist demands that she leave before Brexit is done, with Downing Street suggesting she could stay in post till September. A Tory grassroots revolt is being threatened next month if she does not set out specifics on when she will leave Downing Street. Senior Tory activists will consider the question of May's leadership at an emergency meeting of association chairmen set for Saturday, June the 15th. However, any confidence vote is non-binding, and without party rules being changed, MPs still have no way to force May out. The treasurer of the 1922 committee, Sir Geoffrey Clinton Brown, said he would back a grassroots bid to force May out with a no-confidence vote next month if she did not go of her own volition. When asked about what should happen if Mrs. May failed to set out her own timetable for departure, he said, "It begins to get much more messy." Just to make things even more inconvenient for our heroine, Labour has suggested that cross-party talks designed to break the Brexit deadlock are not going very well, with a source telling The Times that an offer from the government was a million miles away from what it wanted. The very fact that May is considering giving way in areas like a customs union with the EU has enraged her own backbenchers and increased the calls for her to go. Get you someone who clings to you as May clings to her post. So what are the Tories' electoral chances in their current predicament? Cabinet Office Minister David Lidington, the de facto Deputy Prime Minister, said that despite weeks of gruelling cross-party talks with Labour ministers, there was now not enough time to get Brexit done and dusted before EU Parliament elections take place on May 23rd. The EU Parliament elections are a good weather vane to indicate in which direction the political winds are blowing, since this is the only major election in Britain that's not under the first-past-the-post system, devolved elections in Scotland and Wales notwithstanding. It's also where people vote for whomever they really want, since the EU Parliament is not a serious institution. The Tories lost more than 1,300 council seats in last week's local elections, as it was deserted by voters over its handling of Brexit. The main way to prevent another electoral bloody nose was to get Brexit done, so the election did not take place. Nigel's Brexit party is leading in the polls and is looking like the most dangerous contender. The pro-Remain CUK, Change UK party, not so much. Enough with clownwell politics, let's get really deep into the circus tent. The BBC aired a rap song which appears to glamorise South Asian men using white girls as prostitutes and drug dealers. BBC Asian Network played the song Shabayan Boys by Frenzo Harami, which contains the lyrics, "I had a white girl I used to call a cash machine. I got 20 white girls and they would trap, sell drugs for me. They're on in the flats laying on their backs for pee, money." Additional lyrics see Harami boasting about being a pimp, as well as taking drugs and using racial slurs such as, "had them white birds on the side curbs, looking for a dirty packy or a white nerd." A spokesman for the Survivors of Abuse charity commented saying, "I do not think it's appropriate for any individual or group to promote the exploitation of women of any race." The BBC responded to the criticism by saying, "A version of the track which did not meet our editorial standards and was played on Asian Network produced shows in error. The song will not be played on any future shows. In error, okay, Mohammed, sure." On the other hand, some of our curry-smelling friends can have quite interesting opinions. The president of the British Pakistani Youth Council has come under fire for comments made in a series of Facebook posts from 2014 in which he praised Adolf Hitler for killing Jews. Mr. Kamran Ishtiak, who once hosted David Cameron when he wanted to spend some proper time out of Westminster, said he would salute Adolf Hitler, providing he killed more Jews than Muslims. "I know that Hitler was a racist, and to be honest, he would have killed Muslims too if he got a chance. But you know what? I would salute him still if he killed 90 Muslims and 92 Jews," reads a Facebook post from 2014 attributed to the community activist. "Now why he is my hero, because he just killed Jews. Didn't get a chance to kill Muslims, lol," he added. "If it's on my Facebook, I said it," Ishtiak, 37, confirmed when interrogated about the post by local media. "To be honest with you, I feel that about the Jews who are killing the Palestinians now," he told Birmingham Live when asked if he felt the same way now. "Not the Jews who are leaving Israel. There are Jews who support Palestine. I was reading today in the media that there are Jews leaving Israel because Israel didn't live up to their expectations. Okay, but Jews, American Jews, yes, I feel like that about them. The ones who are murdering the Palestinians, I do feel that about them. And what I wrote there, it's about the Jews." When asked his views about whether the Holocaust took place and whether he believed 6 million Jews were murdered, he said, "To be honest, I don't believe that. Every attack, anything on Jews, is exaggerated. Yeah, I think that was an exaggeration too. Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, Cameron. Also, Hitler would not have killed Muslims. Educate yourself." Speaking of anti-Semitic remarks, future Prime Minister Corbyn is in trouble for naming those who must not be named, too. In an article written in 2009, he claimed that the Israeli government has huge influence over the upper echelons of the British media. The piece, written for the far-left Morning Star newspaper, was published shortly after the 2009 Israeli-Gaza conflict. The BBC, citing impartiality reasons, did not broadcast the humanitarian relief appeal on behalf of Gaza. Corbyn's op-ed said of the situation, "What this embarrassing saga demonstrates is the contempt that the BBC directors appear to have for the views of their license fee payers and the unbelievably high levels of influence that Israel's government appears to have in the upper echelons of parts of the media." What a canard of an anti-Semitic trope, really. How very dare you, Jeremy. Let's move on from Clown World and end with Piss Earth. Despite being only 13% of the royal household, Harry and Meghan make up over 50% of the media circus, especially now that their little El Goblino is here. He looks just like the mother, who's the media. No way, who would have thought? A bodily function coloured royal for Septic World 2030. How poetic. Press N to celebrate the new arrival. News for this edition of Albion Dispatches was sourced from Breitbart London, Westminster, The Morning Star, and mainstream UK media sources. Tune in to Albion Dispatches in 2 weeks, heard only on Fash the Nation at therightstuff.biz.
And now, back to Fash the Nation, heard only on the TRS Radio Network.
And we are back. Thank you to Atlas and Alfred the Average for this week's segment of Albion Dispatches. While we are on the topic of FTN segments or bits, I'd like to give a shout out to a former FTN segment, which is now getting called up to the big leagues and standing on its own. This is something I've advocated for a while, not because I necessarily wanted to spin it off, just because it's something that requires a little bit more attention these days. I've seen some people saying that we should talk about it more, and sometimes that's something that I would like to do. On the other hand, I feel like we might never get out of here if we start doing that.
Yeah, well, and also, I mean, just how much things have changed in the last 3 to 4 years. FTN, by the way, will be celebrating a 4th birthday in August. I think TDS will be celebrating a 5th birthday in August. Big 5. And going back 4 or 5 years ago, just looking at the state of Europe with the state of the United States and sort of the total juxtaposition that's taken place now, where Europe is the white pill and America is the black pill, and things are going a lot better. Not perfectly. You know, we shouldn't expect perfection. If you expect perfection, you're always going to be disappointed. But things are going much better in Europe than they were, and things are going much worse in America than they were. So it's good timing.
Yeah, well, that was always, you know, sort of one of the hotly contested debates in the comments section. Ameri burgers versus Euro fags or whatever. It's like, yeah, despite the level of censorship over there and just outright state repression of wrongthink, it was still always very debatable about, like, well, you know, where are things better? Where are things worse? Where are things moving in the right direction? Obviously the demographics are better in a lot of European countries, at least in the countryside at this point.
Yeah. Well, and this is not an argument in favor of censorship or oppression of speech, but it does force them to be a bit more creative with how they reject some of the bullshit. So that played in their favor, as we've seen with yellow vests and especially in Poland and some other places. But we've sort of skipped past the what of this whole thing. Sorry, guys, in Rio Rhinelander. The Europa Report is now its own podcast, in case you missed sort of what we were going for here. It debuted yesterday The pilot episode is with Jay Lorenz, Fashion the Nation's editor-in-chief, and Jay O'Del Rey are going to be the primaries on there. But they're also, I'm going to be in there rotating in. I think I'll be on the second episode. And we're going to have Christopher Dolny on there. We're going to have a bunch of people. We're going to have bona fide Europeans on there as well. So that is going to be a weekly podcast, probably on Tuesday mornings, before Strike and Mike, but we haven't settled into a routine yet, but definitely go check it out. The pilot episode is up on the Right Stuff Dot Biz. It's also up on fashthenation.com. Where you can go check it out. It's about an hour and 20 minutes, I would say. And so far, the reviews have been 88 thumbs up. It's been really well received, as it should be. Those guys do a good job. So definitely go check that out.
Yeah, if I recall correctly, I was the one that came up with the name, or rather boosted it from that, marginal at best. A Tom Cruise movie, or I don't even remember. No, I'm thinking of Minority Report. Europa Report was something else. It wasn't a bad flick, but it's like, this name would be better suited on something else. So I'm glad to see it in syndication, if only because of that.
Well, that's good. I mean, FTN is now a critically acclaimed top alt-right podcast, number one alt-right podcast, as we've been for years and years and years. But also, I guess, the birthplace of great content, too, which is definitely an accolade that I will relish in, Halberstam. Of course, I'm saying all this tongue-in-cheek, but... Oh, man.
Yeah, all in good fun.
Yes, all in good fun. But, I mean... It is good. And that's the thing. It's like the Europe Report, 10 minutes is just not enough to cover, I was helping these guys with the prep. And I mean, they're just enormous. The stories are incredible coming out of there. Again, yeah, it's not perfect.
You can be awash in articles. And that was why we, sort of spun it off into a segment. Of course, we're always looking for opportunities to develop talent. That's part of it also. But it was just like, I can't keep up with this. And now 10 minutes is just not enough.
Yeah. Well, and also back then, again, things were looking much brighter here and not so great there. And so it's appropriate that it gets its own thing. So in any event, we were sort of talking about... It's just wrapping up on immigration.
Speaking of things formerly looking much brighter here.
Yeah, and this is sort of a mixed bag. So we have some black pills, some gray pills, and some white pills. Starting with the black pills, the U.S. is going to allow 30,000 more visas for seasonal workers, including Trump's Mar-a-Lago. Imagine my shock. This is from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Acting Homeland Security Secretary Kevin McLeanin, blah, 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 blah. They're going to add 30,000 more. Spokeswoman for the Center for Immigration Studies, a think tank that's, yeah, we know, tweeted that Trump, with the temporary visa worker plan, was selling out cheap foreign labor. Senator Tom Tillis and Angus King, along with Andy Harris and blah, 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 and about 25 other bipartisan lawmakers sent a letter to Homeland Security this year saying that they were working on a solution for the visa cap. But until then, what's the solution for the visa cap? More? The solution is always more, right? The solution
that
everybody
wants.
Yeah,
that's always the solution. More of these people, and let's just legalize them and let them in and have CBP essentially be like, guest registration specialists.
Yeah, the solution.
And then it's all legal. Everything's above board. Why would anyone be complaining?
The solution that everybody wants is fewer. But we never get fewer. We always get more, even from the Trump administration. And, this is not, now just to be clear, this is not something McLeanin did. This is the 30,000 that were already approved under Beach Friends. But McLeanin could stop it if he wanted to, but he isn't, because this is what the Trump administration wants. This would benefit oyster shucking companies, fisheries, loggers, and seasonal hotels, including Trump's own Mar-a-Lago Club in Florida. All use the visas to hire migrants for temporary work. They say Americans won't do. When what they mean by that is black people won't do. The visas known as H-2Bs will only go to returning foreign workers who have had the visa before over the past three budget years. Many go, blah, 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 blah. Who cares? There's 30,000 more that we don't want that Trump was supposed to stop. Period. End of story. Black pill. The bigger black pill is that the White House is planning, as we alluded to in the first half, the White House is planning to drop the reduction of legal immigration, which is they've been hinting at this for a while, all the way back to the the State of the Union, when Trump said we need more people for the factories. We need, you know, one of the many benefits of booming Trump economy is that we need more third world non-white workers.
Well, I mean, what they say is that these are not even going to be factory people, quote unquote. You know, according to Jared Kushner and what other few proponents this nonsense has, these are all going to be high skilled people.
Yeah.
You know, these are people who can do shit that you just can't do, white American goyim. Trust, you know, and to prove this to you, you know, they have a PhD from, some fucking mud hut university that you never heard of and is not accredited by anyone or anything. But it's all good. This person's going to be drilling holes in your teeth or whatever.
Yeah, they can do stuff that we can't do. They are very adept at taking a very simple process and making it very complicated. They make work difficult. They make work slow. They rack up billable hours, and then they make these companies a lot of money. So they do what white people are unwilling to do, which is to work efficiently, to work smartly, to work intelligently. These people that are brought here, these H-1Bs and whatever else, this is all about billable hours and just gorging, you know, the government and everybody else out of lots of dollars in these make work jobs. White people don't want to work that way. White people want to get the work done and do it efficiently. They know what the job is and they get the job done. So this is worse. It's bad. And Gallup poll after Gallup poll confirms that there is not a single poll out there that anyone can show you that shows that people, that any American, any large number, even a plurality, want more immigration, or even the 1 million that come in every year now legally. Of course, now they're saying that 1.5 million are coming illegally too. I'm sure it's a lot higher than that. But nobody even if there were no illegal immigrants and we were only getting 1 million a year, no, you can't find a poll that shows that Americans want that. They don't. But yet this is what we get. This is nonstop. And the Trump administration is driving it. And now they have conveniently dropped, and this just shows you that the Trump strategy in 2020 is going to be all about impeachment or not impeachment. Oh, they're coming after the legitimacy of my presidency. It's not about the shit that people cared about in 2016, which was fewer immigrants equals higher wages. That was the key. But yet you have Jared Kushner coming out here now saying, we care about wages. That's why we're going to bring in millions of more people. And I guess the argument that can be made there is, but these aren't factory workers, so this will actually increase the wages. But as we already discussed, there's not going to be a decrease in the H-2Bs. They just increase them by 30. There's not going to be a decrease in the low skill. This is just a way of increasing the high skill and the low skill at the same time and telling people that it's a neutral. It's neutral. Yeah. Right.
I mean, them saying that this is going to be neutral, like we're just going to change the mix, you know, and that very much is the rhetoric coming out of the administration. It's like, well, it's like, you know, who wants that anyway? But I mean, yeah, fucking Kushner. But, you know, this is all probably going to go nowhere anyway.
Oh, it's not right? going anywhere. It's not going anywhere. Yeah, it's not going anywhere. And I mean, because of how divided the country is, I mean, even if you had a Kushner proposal on the table, Democrats don't want that. As we talked about on a recent FTN, I believe it was this weekend, their debate is on whether or not criminal illegals should be given amnesty or not. Like, they want to open the borders. Now it's just a debate between the people in their party that want all criminals to come in or only some criminals to come in. That's like the debate that's going on. So they don't want to touch the Kushner plan.
Even if it's just DUIs, like that's kind of what these people are fucking famous for, that and domestic abuse.
Yeah. Yeah. And raping, of course, raping. So yeah, I mean, so it's not going to go anywhere. That's sort of the gray pill, but the black pill, the absolute black pill, is that Trump is even going to fight on these issues anymore, which no longer whets the appetite of the people who came out to vote for him. And I heard, this was another thing that I heard Rush Limbaugh doing, was he was sort of, and I forgot to mention this in the first half, but it's tied in with immigration, so I'm going to go for it. He was saying that this whole, he's saying that the narrative that we're putting out there, not us specifically, but he's poo-pooing the Nancy Pelosi narrative that Trump is trolling. Russia's narrative to MAGAPEDs and, you know, his audience or whatever, is that Trump isn't trolling. Why would Trump need to troll on impeachment? Because he doesn't need to increase his coalition. He doesn't need to excite his base because his base is already excited. And my take is that he's doing this impeachment shit because his base isn't excited. He's lost in support and enthusiasm. There is some MAGAPEDs that are really excited about Trump for superficial reasons, for owning the left or whatever. But this is when you hear Limbaugh going so hard on this narrative that Trump's base is excited. They're very excited about President Trump and all the things that he's done for them. And blah, blah, blah. It's like, Rush, like you're putting too fine of a point on it here. It's very clear, especially when you see White House drops plan to reduce legal immigration. It's like, what else? Because all this is garbage, and they hate Kushner. And when you go out and look at Breitbart's comment section, it's like Rush, you're full of shit, man. The base is not excited about this.
Yeah, and Kushner is he's just so fucking disgusting and bizarre. You know, his mannerisms, his speech patterns, just the way he conducts himself. I saw a brief segment that was him. I want to say it was him very briefly shilling his new numerically neutral immigration plan or whatever, and it's just like, my God, like the fact that you let this fucking thing marry your daughter, who is ostensibly your pride and joy, if nothing else. It's incomprehensible. It's a black mark that now that I sort of understand all this a little bit better, you will never get away from in my book.
No. Despite all the in detail sort of, you know, confusion and protestations that Trump had about Jared marrying Ivanka, it's inexcusable. It's like, you don't have control over this domain, Donald. Then what really do you have control over, fucking pussy?
It's like, what are you high right now? Fucking go to your room.
Basically, punish Donald. I forget what I was going to say about this. Delegating to Kushner. There was something else I was going to say. I can't remember. I mean, nothing's going to come out of it. Oh, I remember what I was going to say. I keep seeing this touted as neutral. Like it's going to be neutral, like as if that's some benefit. Like, don't worry, Shlomo, we're not going to decrease the number of immigrants coming in. And it's like they're touting this as a positive thing, but show me the cuts. Where are the cuts? Because
it's going to end up being like a baseline budgeting type deal. It's like, yeah, any reduction in the rate of increase is a cut, Goyim.
Right. But I'm saying, like, we're going to allow X number of high skilled workers to come in. Okay. But you just increased the H-2Bs, which are seasonal, like shitbag, you know, oyster shucking, like, you know, illiterate sort of yobs. So where are the cuts? And are they doing all these increases now so that this is the new baseline for the low skill? Like, we haven't solved this problem with the caps yet. Just swing the door open until we do. I mean, so yeah, there's no like neutrality would be bad enough. Like if the plan came out and said, we're going to cut 500,000 here and add 500,000 there, that would be bad enough. But the fact is, there aren't going to be cuts. It's just going to be a net increase. Period. End of story. but there's not going to be legislation to do this. So until then, they just come in illegally, and that's how it's.
High skilled doesn't mean shit. I suspect there was a point at which that was kind of like a euphemism for white, whether or not it was true or not. But these days it's like, are these people white? Are they going to appreciably alter the demographics and thus political landscape of the United States in an unfavorable way? Then fuck off. Nothing else matters.
Yeah, nothing. Well, it used to be that way. Not anymore. So the white pills, though, on immigration, and these are only, you know, the white pills that we're going to put out there are only going to be things that have already happened. White pill is not thinking about, considering, in the process of yada, yada, yada. These are things that happened this week. Now, these things are basically meaningless when you're looking at the Kushner plan, which is never going to come into being because they're not going to get control of Congress. But in the meantime, the Ninth District Court of Appeals has allowed the Remain in Mexico policy. You know, this is news from a couple weeks ago where they allowed a temporary stay while the government got its shit together on arguments. Now it's a prolonged stay. And this is usually an indication that it's eventually going to get ruled on in favor of the administration. So this would be a good thing because the illegal immigration is a problem. I mean, I know it's sort of common. It's a common talking point of like, it's not, you know, that's the focus. Let's just focus on illegals and they got to come here legal. It still is a big problem. So it does need to be stopped somehow. And the biggest way of going about that is the dealing with the asylum. And that's basically the sum total of the white pills is on the asylum, because the screeners have now been ordered to take a more confrontational approach as Trump aims to turn more migrants away at the border. So not only are they doing Remain in Mexico, but there's this essentially the directives have been given to asylum screeners who don't want to cooperate, who want to let these people in no matter what, to look at the credible fear sort of recitations that they're being given with a more more scrutinizing eye and kick them aside. So,
yeah, I had, I think, an Atlantic article, which was an interview with one or two of these screeners and how things have changed and, you know, how this person is having a really tough go of it. I can't remember if we discussed it on the Saturday show, or certainly if we didn't, I should be slipping that on over to Mr. Larry Ridgway, because there was some gold in them there hills.
Yeah, there have been a couple articles like that about women who wanted to become judges or whatever because they wanted to do some good or whatnot. And then they arrive on the scene under Jeff Sessions and they want to quit their job and their life is destroyed and they're sitting on the couch eating gallons of ice cream at night with their box wine and just hating their life because they thought that they were going to be like social justice warriors, like bringing all these Mexicans into the country. And now that's not happening. But oh, man.
Yeah, I'll have to find it. This person was whining about how they were being manipulated by the administration, the new policies and all this stuff. It's like, bitch, you're being manipulated by the fucking asylum seekers, you know, of which, like, you know, everyone knows that 90% of them are denied. So, like, somebody's manipulating you, but it's not who you think.
Yeah. So they have sent new guidelines to asylum officers, directing them to take a more skeptical and confrontational approach during interviews with migrants seeking refuge in the United States. It's the latest measure aimed at tightening the nation's legal loopholes that Homeland Security officials blame for a spike in border crossings. According to internal documents and staff emails obtained Tuesday by the Washington Post, asylum officers will more aggressively challenge applicants whose claims of persecution contain discrepancies, and they will need to provide detailed justifications before concluding that an applicant has a well-founded fear of harm if deported to their home country. So this is an improvement. But you got to look at this from the big picture, taken all together. Remain in Mexico, more scrutinized first interviews, and then if you do pass the interview, the ruling that Barr made, which has so far been unchallenged, is that you will be deported indefinitely once if you do pass the credible fear. So if you're one of these people, you're looking at either immediate deportation because you didn't pass muster in the first interview, or if you do pass muster in the first interview, like essentially detention forever, and that's even if you make it into the United States. Now, without serious manpower on the border, the only logical choice left is to pay coyotes even more money to smuggle you into the country, because that's the only surefire way that you're going to get in and get free, essentially. But that's they're making it more difficult. So I can't say that progress isn't being made on this one issue. But a lot of these things were set in motion by Jeff Sessions. Bill Barr did the indefinite detention piece. Will it continue? We'll see. Ultimately, this is a problem. I mean, I don't know. The illegal immigration problem right now, it's keeping it. It has the one benefit of keeping it at the forefront of people's minds. I mean, if the problem went away completely, unfortunately, the Republican base tends to move on to other issues. But right now, they're being distracted with impeachment. So I don't know. To me, it's like we can't be using these problems as a way to keep the base engaged. We just have to fucking solve them like we said we were going to.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, certainly that would be ideal and preferable. But, you know, like you say, it cuts both ways. And, you know, Trump is like, I don't know. I mean, like I say, he's of extremely limited utility to me at this point, aside from in the metapolitical sense.
Yeah.
You know, because the value of him being in the Oval Office, like, it seriously can't be underestimated as far as all of that.
For now. So the, where are we going? Sort of a hard pivot here to the Democratic struggle session where these people can't seem to get their shit together. I mean, how hard could it be? I mean, they can't run on these issues that they used to be. I mean, it used to be, you know, 20 years ago in this country, you could have a Democrat come out and run hard like Bill Clinton did on crime and on the border and win. And there, at least back then, you at least had some sort of, I guess, not responsibility, I guess sort of accountability. Like, Trump couldn't get away with doing what he's doing. Like, you couldn't get away with just letting the border go. There was at least one party, and back then it was the Democrats, who had a vested interest in doing something about this because of the unions and their, you know, dedication to labor. But that's not the case anymore. And so now it's just this issue is they have the ability of ignoring this completely. And it's been, you know, the kosher sandwich loves shit like that. So,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, their dedication to labor has, you know, as far as them prompting them to do anything regarding illegal immigration, it's been mostly lip service. I mean, even Richard Trumka, who's like this like fat, disgusting looking mustachioed fucking guy who just has like union written all over him, even though he probably makes like $500,000 a year now. It's like, dude, you know, well, I mean, it was, you know, like I said, Trump was sort of accurate in his critique of Biden's endorsements by all these unions, particularly the firemen's union. It's like, how many of your rank and file are actually, you know, supporting you in these endeavors? Because it's probably not very many. Like, all those people in that union hall or whatever in Pittsburgh, that which was a mostly white or fairly monochromatic crowd, as Chris Matthews would say if he was talking about a Republican event. Like, I don't know how many of those people were really there because they were super enthusiastic about voting for Joe Biden. That's going to be the big question, one of them.
Yeah, well, and this has started, you know, this is, in some ways, it's I enjoy watching the whole thing burn. In other ways, I wish that there was some sort of competition for Donald, because it allows him to just sort of sell this snake oil bullshit to people on the impeachment front and everything else. And it sort of allows, you know, the chaos from the Democrats allows him to sort of not have to try. He can just mail it in many ways. I mean, because look at this. This is the struggle session as it unfolds. So you got Biden out there with his stronger than expected launch to his campaign. This is the from the Hill, the memo: Dem race for White House takes on new shape. Opening up a wide lead in several opinion polls, the scale of the Biden bump is all the more surprising, given that the former vice president had to navigate troubled waters, blah, 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 blah. There is a freight train coming down the track, and if we don't take drastic action to derail it. So the race is now becoming a little bit more about electability, like what we were talking about last week. Who can beat Donald Trump?
Biden's plan does seem to actually be working better than I think basically anyone thought. And yeah, people are desperate to get rid of Donald Trump. I mean, you know, of course, when they're propagandized every day about how, you know, the country's halfway over now and it's going to be completely over if he even serves one day of a second term as president. You know, I'd say the other part is sort of, you know, with the polling is like, I would question the nature of these samples, but we can talk about that more.
Yeah. Later on. Yeah, we can talk about that more later on. I mean, this is the electability piece is really what they wanted this election to be about. It's sort of Biden's entry into the race is sort of shifting that into high gear. You know, even though there is a lot of protest from the Coalition of the Ascendant about the phrase electability, which, as we sort of talked about this weekend, is somewhere between a white supremacist talking point and a way that the kosher sandwich sort of keeps people in line. The Democratic primary was sort of going off the rails when it became a shit test about Medicare for all and the Green New Deal and reparations for blacks and blah, 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 blah. But if they can make the argument about who can beat Trump, they're sort of shifting gears early. I see this by getting Biden into the race and declaring him the front runner. The question is going to be how long is his sort of 30-point lead, to what extent that's real, and not just sort of a placebo. How long is that going to last, and what happens when it fades? Because if they can make this about electability and who can beat Trump, it's going to be a slam dunk. But if it slips back into this whole sort of woke shit test, chaos, whatever it was, it's going to be a loser. And I mean, I don't know how long they can keep this going this far out.
Yeah, no, that does seem to be the question. The electability thing we were talking about. Kamala Harris brought it up, saying its purpose is to minimize and marginalize issues that impact all of us. It used to try and shut us up, she told the whatever progressive gathering she was speaking at. We're talking about those issues, and we won't be shut up and we won't be silenced. Her latest appraisal comes amid growing perception reflected in media that will take a white man, perhaps former Vice President Joe Biden or Senator Bernie Sanders, to defeat Trump in battleground states where he beat Hillary Clinton in 2016. Blah, 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 blah. She says this quote unquote electability argument is bullshit. No. That's what Bakari Sellers said. A former South Carolina state representative who appears on CNN and Sports Hairs. It's the biggest faux pas that Democrats are making this election cycle. Disregards the fact that the only Democratic candidate to win the presidency in the last two decades was a black guy. And second We've allowed working class to enter our lexicon and mean only the white working class. It's like, but where's the lie, though? And totally disregard a whole other swath of voters. I mean, like we were talking about in the conversation before we started recording, like these people want to take Biden out. You know, that article about all these people trying to blunt his momentum before he just like shuts this thing down completely is, you know, they're just they want him out of the way. There's definitely a lot of factions and people and campaigns that want him out of the way, but they're trying to figure out how to get him out of the way without creating a fireball that ends up engulfing a lot of stuff.
Yeah, like flicking a cigarette into just, you know, a 55-gallon drum of gasoline or something. I mean, they know they're going to have to get rid of this guy at some point. They hope that he does it quickly to himself. That's why there was the attempt to sort of make the Me Too thing a thing. They wanted to get, you can tell that that's what they wanted to happen. It didn't play well because of all the reasons we've said numerous times in the past, we don't need to rehash them again, is that they don't really care about these things as much anymore. They don't care about the Me Too, especially when, you know, what's at stake, et cetera, et cetera. But the problem is it absent this field of 20 other candidates, 21 other candidates, how many there are, they could have gotten away with this, like, we need someone who's electable, and straw-manned the unelectable candidate. But the problem is that they have 19 other unelectable candidates out there, and unelectable is just like a euphemism for not white, right? Or not white. I mean, look at Klobuchar. She's white, but she's not electable. I mean, I was listening to her in the car on the Fox News town hall tonight, and just god awful. I knew immediately who it was who was talking. She's just that awful. And these are all unelectable. All these people are unelectable. And
Amy Klobuchar, the club, reminds me of being an early teen playing GoldenEye 007 for N64. There was a gun called the club, and if that's all you had in your inventory, you basically were fucking finished.
Well, I mean, that seems to be, she seems to be top of the pack for white women in the, well, no, I'm sorry. You got Warren. I guess she fits the bill. She's actually doing better, in the polls.
She has risen a little bit in the polls, and there were some pieces on Salon and other such publications that were shilling that extremely hard because, you know, one thing about all the polling with Biden is that, you know, these POC Democratic activists and also us were correct in our assessment that, like, Buttigieg and fellow white Bernie Sanders are the ones who really have been hurt by Biden just like getting into this thing and taking it over ostensibly.
Yeah, well, I mean, Biden has 47% support with black women. Bernie has 18. But hold on to your hats. Butt Plug is polling at 2% with blacks.
Yeah, well, that's you know, something we've said probably was in the mail, and yeah, there it is. Yeah, there was a big article, big to do in the Hill about how he was, you know, his whole strategy for South Carolina and him improving his numbers, you know, with black people and persons of color in the Democratic primary electorate, you know, and them openly stating that you're finished unless you can do that, which is true. It just, you know, I don't know. It is what it is. Booty judge.
Yeah. There's also an article in Politico, he was in South Carolina, which, by the way, is the first state in the primary lineup for the Democrats where there's lots of blacks. And so that's why they're spending a lot of time there. He scheduled a meet and greet Monday in Orangeburg, a city that is 70% black, probably misappropriately named at this point, but only a dozen or so people of color showed up in a crowd of more than 100. So he only had 100 people show up, and only a dozen or so were people of color. So how many actual blacks, though? Because, like, they're not very specific about that. And I would have to, I'm thinking the number is probably somewhere around zero.
Yeah, probably. It sounds like he managed to get, you know, a full 1% of the white people in the town.
Yeah, I mean, dude, 2% support from blacks. That's probably black people answering that polling question that are like, who dat do? But who? What? Who did? They probably had idea who he was.
That's the thing about Biden and all this polling, you know, where he's up by 20 points. He's up by 30 points. He's running away with this thing. It's fucking over. You know, I have my doubts about how real this is. And to the extent that the polling is real, as any polling is, you know, that's his support is a mile wide and an inch deep, you know, sort of like they're saying about Bernie's before Biden got into the race, like, oh, Biden got in and all of a sudden it evaporated. Well, there's all manner of things, a couple of which I think we're going to talk about shortly that could make Biden's support evaporate. But if somehow you were oversampling oldsters, you know, blue hairs and blue plate specials and so on and so forth, you have the demographic effect of various age groups, you know, in the Democratic Party, but also the country at large, you know, as they're older, they're whiter. But I think also older people are more comfortable with Biden. If you're somehow massively oversampling, like only doing landlines or something, if you could figure out a way to do that, like, that's probably about how it would look, I think.
Yeah, well, because there's no, I mean, just looking at this from a very sort of simplistic point of view, putting yourself in that point of view, like, what did Bernie do in the last 3 weeks to go from 30% to 18%? It makes no sense. And what did Biden do simply by saying, I'm running for president now, comma, it's official? That makes him go from 30 to 17.
The latest, you know, help us, Joe Biden. You're our only hope. You know, like the New York State Attorney General Letitia James. Now, like, these people are looking to glom onto anything, and if they think you're it, you can go straight to the fucking top for a little while. Shit, look at Michael Avenatti, dude.
Yeah, he was a very popular guy until he was not. and actually, yeah, I think part of the problem with him was that he became so popular and was, like, wrecking the narrative. So the Jews destroyed him. I mean, essentially, with all this legal stuff that's being done to him. But I mean, some of it's like, is he really being destroyed, or is it just like he's destroying himself? I mean, we've had stuff in the prep for a while. Now it's not there. It's in the prep graveyard. So I'm not even going to pull it up. But I mean, he owes, like, he's been, like, shaking people down. He's just, like, doing their own game, but he's not one of them. And he's also messing up the narrative. So fucking get the hook. Get this guy out of here.
But, dude, like, when Shaniqua finds out about how Joe Biden was actually, you know, did the bit of listening to his constituents in mid-70s America and came up, you know, and was actively trying to foil the plan to have their little angels bust to some nice white school somewhere and fuck it all up, you know, and have, you know, it's like, sorry, little Timmy, you're headed off to the ghetto because, you know, Shlomo gets whatever the fuck he wants. You know,
the question is though, who is going to flick their cigarette into the can of gasoline?
Yeah. Who's going to pull the trigger on that? Cause there's going to be no undoing it.
Somebody will. Cause the story of the week essentially is that Biden is now the clear and ever present front runner. Bernie can't win. This is the media narrative. Bernie can't win. And everybody else is struggling to get media. That's why you have Kamala Harris out there doing electability and butt plug is struggling, whatever. The question is how long can that process go on where when somebody doesn't start getting Trumpian? I hate to use the word because he's sort of just like sullied everything good about the way that he does it. when is somebody going to go for Joe's throat? Because they want him out of the race. Because the expectation is that Joe's going to implode, right? But if he doesn't implode, and the media props him up, because I think they're also going to do the same thing with Biden that they did with Hillary. Remember this from way back in early FTN days? The narrative that they just don't have Hillary on TV very much. The media does a very good job of branding her campaign for her, but they hardly ever showed her at events doing her voice, because her voice is so horrible. And Stutter and Joe, if he continues on...
I don't know. I think Hillary had some sort of awareness that she was actually a pretty shit retail politician. Biden thinks he's the fucking cat's pajamas.
Yeah. He does think he's really good. But the question is the media going to save from himself in the meantime? And, you know, this is from Breitbart as well. Democrats have lost the 2020 enthusiasm edge. While a full 75% of Republicans have a high interest in the 2020 election, only 73% of Democrats say the same thing. Usually they're a lot more engaged than Republicans. So, I mean, what are they going to do? Like, is this primary process with the struggle session going to wear out their people? Not only wear them out of donor dollars, but at the end of the day, will the people... What happens when the, let's say that Bernie has a strong 30% of the Democratic Party? What happens when they fucking burn him again? Then what? I mean, it's not going to be, they're going to have a very hard, now Bernie has come out and said, like, I'll unite behind whoever the front runner is. Do you really see him doing that again, though, if they burn him a second time?
I can see him doing that again. His base, you know, like I have been saying, that's a storyline that we should be anticipating to continue to develop, you know, the animus. Obviously, Hillary Clinton's not around. There is no Clinton camp. But everyone sort of remembers, like, who everyone was, you know, if you venture into, like, a leftoid comment section and listening to these people talk, it's still very much there. And that's another one of those things we want to get rid of this guy, but we also don't want to cause, like, a massive explosion that engulfs half the fucking system in, like, a shockwave.
Yeah, because that's what's coming. I mean, imagine if we didn't know what we know about Trump now, and we only knew what he was selling during the campaign, and they succeeded at burning him at the GOP convention, and then you never learned anything else about his shitty, like, you know, personal stuff, you know, especially like Kushner Inc. and all that stuff. Let's say that, like, none of that ever came to light, and all you knew as a base voter was that this guy who came along and was ready to buck the system.
Just like martyred God Emperor. Yeah. Ooh, man.
Well, but on top of that, then he comes out and says, everybody support Marco Rubio. We all have to beat Hillary. Everyone support Marco. And then Marco goes out and is a shitbag for 4 years and, you know, just increases immigration. Does all the shit that Trump's doing now. If Trump then ran again, which is essentially what Bernie's doing now, on the same platform, and then again capitulated and said, all right, everybody get behind Mitt Romney. At what point do Bernie supporters sort of be like, okay, but like this, I mean, the good news for the Bernie supporters is that they have other legitimate candidates to run behind. Republicans wouldn't. They only would have Donald Trump in that hypothetical scenario. So my question is, I guess, is if Bernie does that again, and as we sort of talked about before on FTN, is that this really is a lot of people's last elections. This is Biden's last election. It's Hillary's last opportunity to run for president. It's Trump's. It's Bernie's. If Bernie does this to his base a second time, I mean, do you really think some of these people are going to be like, all right, yeah, we got to unite behind Joe Biden to beat Donald Trump? I mean, leftists aren't going to fall for that shit. Maybe dumb ones, but I don't.
Yeah, I mean, the issue with Bernie, you know, like I said, there's a lot of leftover, you know, animosity there. But It's, I mean, the media shilling, as we've been saying, they've been going 24/7 since Inauguration Day. You know, that's going to, you know, and these people's natural inclination is to say that we have to have anybody but Trump. I mean, that's why Biden is, you know, doing so well to the extent that these polls are real in any way. But it's not going to last. I mean, the primary would need to be, you know, be more acrimonious. And I think that's what we're going to get before too long. It's still the same situation I think we were in a month ago. Like, everyone is waiting, you know, Biden's in and now he's, you know, shot straight to the top, but everyone is like, I feel like the contest hasn't really started yet. You know, it's like we're still on the parade laps.
Yeah, it really hasn't. And I'll say this again. I think if you didn't have Bernie, if you didn't have if the coalition of the ascendant hadn't gotten the cherry popped on a black president with Barack Obama, and they didn't have so many fellow COAs in Congress, and you could unite these people behind Biden, and Biden actually had a solid message for white working class voters, Trump would not be reelected in 2020. But because of all the chaos and because of all the things that are soon to happen within the Democrat, I just don't see all of these other candidates dropping out and everybody uniting behind Biden. I just don't see it. They don't want him in. They don't. And a lot of too many of them are not willing to put any of the you know, sort of low time preference into this of we need to just beat Trump. It's
plus I'm sure just like us, you know, these people or maybe not them themselves, but they're sort of more savvy campaign operatives, not the affirmative action campaign operatives, but the real ones are not convinced by these polls at all.
No. So I'll offer the prediction here is that Biden is going, these polls aren't going to last. If they're real, if they're at least synthesized in the form of the questions that are being asked or the samples, I haven't looked closely at them to know that, but I'm just sort of hypothesizing here, is that it sort of buys him a little bit of cushion. If he does collapse a bit in the polls, is that they can still say, oh, look, but he's still the front runner. Whereas if he came into the race and they remain tied 30-30 with Biden with butt plug and a close third, and then Biden collapsed, it would just be inevitable. Because I think the media wants Biden as president. Like, let's be clear. He's not going to get the love that Obama got. And there are going to be, the media has gotten browner too. So that's another thing, is there's not going to be total unified support for Biden. That's another headwind this guy's fighting too. It isn't just other people in the Democratic Party. It's the media is not going to be totally behind this guy. Because they answer to different constituent groups in the progressive state as well.
We're not coming off the heels of the Bush administration. Barry Satoro kind of fucking created hard times for the Democratic Party.
We're not coming off the heels of the Bush administration? We kind of are coming off the heels of the Trump administration.
Well,
is
I mean, kind of. Kind of, yeah, but yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, let's do Gabbard. And then this one bottom of the stack piece that's funny as fuck, and then get out of here. We're at 2 hours for sure.
Yeah. Well, speaking of potential Bernie alternatives and having a few other reasonable quality candidates to choose from, this Tulsi Gabbard got the old RAPAW endorsement, which I'm sure nobody is surprised by, in a recent appearance on RT, of course. Former Representative Ron Paul was talking about Tulsi Gabbard, saying there's a lot of choices there, Paul said, of the Democratic primary field. If you said I'm going to give you a quiz, I want you to name all 20, I'd say just give me a D-. But Tulsi Gabbard is by far the very, very best. She is very, very liberal when it comes to economics. We probably wouldn't agree with too much on economics, but she is good on foreign policy. She does not want these engagements, which is an economic issue. You save a lot of money by not being engaged like this. But she is the most intelligent and would be the best of the people that want to be our president. I think she would be the best to bring about peace.
You know who would be, you know who would be the very, very best presidential candidate? Ron Paul. Because Ron Paul could cost Donald Trump the presidency, which would be the very, very best thing that he could do. Especially if he went hard on foreign policy and on immigration. I'd vote for Ron Paul for sure.
Yeah. If he tossed his hat in the ring, that would probably be extremely bad for Blormf.
Yeah, it would. Even if he only shaved off 1 or 2%, it's enough. It's enough to get the job done.
So yeah, this, I saw this Breitbart article and sort of got a kick out of that. But then on Real Clear Politics video today, I saw it as if to put a very fine point on it. This ad that Gabbard apparently cut at some point, I thought it was bready good.
The neocons, neolibs, and mainstream media are all singing from the same song sheet, saying, we want war. We need more war. Now, Trump never gets media support unless he's threatening war or carrying out a military action.
You see these beautiful pictures at night. I am tempted to quote the great Leonard Cohen. I'm guided by the beauty of our weapons. They are beautiful pictures of fearsome armaments.
Today, it's Venezuela.
The president has been crystal clear. Military action is possible if that's what's required.
But he needs to understand that a bullet to the forehead may be his way out of Venezuela.
Sometimes one kick at the door and the whole rotten edifice falls down.
Tomorrow, Iran.
I am so pleased that President Trump is letting the Iranian president know there's a new sheriff in town.
Who knows who will be next?
Nobody is safe in the world of neoconservatives. Yeah, her ads are good, man. We were talking before we started recording about the other one where she listed really all the world's religions that matter, except for one. She did it twice. Really great ad by Tulsi Gabbard. And absent Ron Paul, she's my top choice.
Yeah, yeah, that was a good conversation, except for, what was the guy's name? Baruch Goldstein. What's the old saying? One man's terrorist is another man's hero.
Yeah, we got monuments to this fucking guy. oh, man. Well, we got one bottom of the stack piece. This is from The Forward. White nationalists are using clowns to spread hatred. Oh, good. Last month, my colleague Ari Feldman received a strange email from an anonymous source. That normally wouldn't be very notable. The Forward gets unsolicited emails all the time, ranging from news tips to complaints to apocalyptic prophecies. Except for the unexpected closing, I'd love to read some of the apocalyptic prophecies that the Forward receives. I mean, you could almost do a bit on the just like coming up with the fictional letters that the email in the inbox of the Forward that they get from people. Fucking could milk that motherfucker for a long time. Anyway, except the closing line of this one email that they got, honk, honk, motherfucker. At first, we thought it was just a creative, chorological insult. More original than the capos we usually get over the transom. But as it turns out, there may be a more sinister motive.
Very sinister.
White nationalists are trying to appropriate clowns for their own ends. As Right Wing Watch reported on April 4th, users of the online message board 4chan, which is popular among white nationalists, have been trying to popularize a character named Honkler, which is an image of Pepe the Frog, the cartoon mascot of the so-called alt-right, wearing a clown nose and colorful wig. Honkler, a new white nationalist meme. Other online anti-Semites have built upon the Honkler imagery when citing news that confirms their nihilistic worldview when describing what they see as the illogic of a liberal, non-racist society. They write,
fucking nihilistic worldview.
Yes. Why would it
Jesus
be that way?
Christ.
Yeah. When describing what they see as the illogic of a liberal, non-racist society, they write that they are living in a, quote, clown world, or just write honk honk as shorthand to get the point across. Yeah, I noticed you're not sort of talking about any of the reasons why this is happening. Just our nihilistic worldview. Like, you're being nihilist, Goy. You're being very nihilistic. Why are you being that way? What the... Oh, aren't you happy with all these consumer baubles that we've given you at rock-bottom prices? Aren't you anesthetized yet, Goy?
It's like, yeah, no. More like my entire civilization is now an exercise in absurdity. So it's like, look, Shlomo, you want me to be, deriving humor from this, because let me tell you, that's as good as it's going to get for you.
Yeah, I mean, and of course, because this resonates, that's why they're pissed about it. This is one form, one very effective form of standing up and saying, the fucking emperor has no clothes on, you fucking idiots. Like, this is a fucking clown show. Look at this. And of course, the picture is the Drag Queen Story Hour, adult entertainment for kids with the clowns. Welcome to Clown World, Hong Kong. This resonates. Look, I'm not defending a butt plug in any way, shape, or form. Period. End of story. But the protesters that are showing up at his events, like, that's fine. Like, whatever. They can do that. I think it would be more effective as clowns showing up there. I mean, it's some of the... I mean, the protesting... like. This is an effective meme. This is a meme. Otherwise, they'd ignore it. But they're pissed about it. It's gotten under their skin. It's made it into the annaled pages of the forward. So this is hitting it out of the park. So honk on,
my friends. They should be wearing, they should show up instead of wearing like football shoulder pads with spikes of dildos all over it.
Yeah, so I guess the meme is dead now, though, that it's written about in the forward. I guess that's it's over. Like, once it makes it to, once they start writing about it, it's like, it's on the way out. I hope it doesn't die. Oh, but all memes.
And well, it's got to, the circulation of it has to expand a little bit beyond the forward, because another thing I agree with Moik on is that there's two kinds of people in the world who know what's going on.
Yes.
Jews and white nationalists.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Well, that's all we got for the midweek show. Speaking of you and Moik, it's you and Moik this weekend. I will be away, so you and Moik are going to be taking over the weekend show. You guys always do a fantastic job. And then it will be Ethnarch and me the weekend after that. So, I don't think you and I return. Well, we'll be on the midweek show. Midweek shows will continue with you and me. But, we'll be just doing some rotation. In the meantime, go check out the Europa Report pilot episode if you haven't. And if you're hearing this, you've already signed up for the paywall. But tell your friends to sign up for the paywall. And if you want to write for FTN, email us at ftnmail@tutanota.com. We'll catch you guys later on.